Hey, John Boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
The White Sox, to me, after watching them, and again, it was one day where I was able to see them up close, the talent is there, but the flaws and the sloppiness are there too. And I think that right now the White Sox are a frustrating team to watch.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
Trevor, what has changed for you over the last week?
Feeling like myself in the box lately, and that's just kind of as simple as I can put it. Just trying to hit the ball hard and not do too much, and big things happen for me sometimes.
Three-run home run, Trevor Story, who is volcano hot right now.
MLB Network Insider.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy, I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, our friend and yours, JP John Paul Morosi. What's up, Jay Pizzle?
I'm doing great, guys. I am continually impressed by the creativity and the recency of the content that you guys have in those welcome back montages. So to Tanny and to Shane, thanks so much for everything. I really appreciate it.
Love that you give Shane some light, even though he has very little to do with that particular thing. But
no, I make all of them, John. Thank you.
I don't think we've spoken to you since you came over and had a moment with those guys.
We did.
We did?
Yeah, the next day.
Yeah. Remember when we talked to you last time, John?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, all the love.
And
good.
Here's the thing.
Me too. Memorable.
Were you here? Was Speaks here on that show when it happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was here.
Good Lord. Do you see what I'm working with, John? This is the guy. Yeah.
I know. It's okay. It's okay.
Look,
this is all among friends. Just a bunch of friends talking about the White Sox and then the Cubs, maybe a little bit at some point too.
Well, yeah, Jack Peterson just homered off a lefty. Okay, out there in San Francisco. So I'm like, I'm distracted. Okay, John understands why I get distracted.
Exactly. No, I appreciate that, and I appreciated Shane and Tanny both staying in there through at the end of that game. And the amazing thing is, although my voice quality has improved in the last week. Well, what I said then remains true now. Team has talent. They're still frustrating. They're still inconsistent. They're still, I think, very dependent on Luis Robert as the catalyst. And, of course, now he's out of the lineup. I wanted to make sure, in the spirit of Tanny's great montage to begin, that I have the most recent information for you. And on that score, I want to mention this, that when Luis Robert scores a run, the White Sox are 13-3. When he does not, or when he is not in the lineup, they're 8-18. He really is the guy that drives them. And when he is not either in the lineup or clicking, they're just not the same team. And it is amazing to me when you look at the way the season began and what we all thought this division was going to look like. The Twins having a comfortable lead was not at all what I thought this division would look like at the end of May.
So when you talk about that comfortable lead, it's the second biggest first to second division lead in all of baseball, 5.5 games. They play them 7 times in just July, so there's plenty of games left. We understand that. But what's the tipping point? You know, if they're this far back at this point in the season, now it's time to panic about the division. Like, where is that in John Morosi's mind?
Yeah, I don't think it's imminent. I really don't. I would say that they have to have, again, and we're still, I guess, goodness, just 2 months away from the trade deadline, which is why I suppose it's starting to get to that time where you decide what your team's all about. Usually that marker is after the draft, which no longer is in early June, but I think that we're probably about 2 weeks away from when teams start to really look at those moves and where they're at. This is a team that has flaws. The good part about it is I do think with the arrival of Cueto, who's been really interesting, and of course I think Kopech overall, you'd have to say his season's been a tremendous success. Obviously the walk totals may be higher than you'd want it to be, but I think for the most part he has delivered exactly what you hoped he would. Keuchel has struggled a bit. I think they're hoping, obviously, the Lynn is a factor here pretty soon, and they've got Giolito on the way back too. So, I mean, for me, it's the offense that has been a little bit frustrating more than anything else. The defense also has been there. It's also possible this team is just a little more flawed than we thought. And if they're flawed, I don't think that they're one move away. They probably are just banking on the likes of Jimenez to come back and hoping that Moncada gets things going again, but he's come back and really struggled offensively, Johan has. So it's just a team that right now, we talk about some clubs that on the positive side are greater than the sum of their parts. The White Sox are the opposite. They're lesser than the sum of their parts. And honestly, if you look at where their run differential is, they're actually, in a way, kind of lucky to be where they are at the moment. They're a minus 35 run differential.
Yeah.
Minus 35. I mean, they're pretty fortunate from where I sit to be second in this division and not third.
Every time I see Rafael Devers, especially when he's here, I think about how the White Sox wanted him in the Chris Sale trade, couldn't get him, got Moncada instead, along with Kopech. What I had heard back then was that they weren't going to get Kopech or weren't going to get an arm of consequence if they got Devers instead of Moncada. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. Let me ask you about the Red Sox offense, which has obviously been completely on fire for a couple of weeks. J.D. Martinez is outrageous, and Trevor Story and everybody. But when they're sitting on 3-2 curveballs from Dylan Cease, and his stuff is so varied, and they're all over it last night, and then Ozzie Guillen comes on our morning show today and wonders whether Dylan Cease is tipping pitches, how reasonable is it for us, the baseball fan, to think about sign stealing right now in the environment of baseball? Because when Alex Cora and the Red Sox are here, sometimes you think about it. How reasonable is it for us to even consider it right now?
Well, there's two different things there. There's pitch tipping and there's sign stealing. And I think that we have to be clear about what both those two things mean. I think pitch tipping means that on the last start, that when the Red Sox looked at video, or any team looked at video, that they would see, oh, when he throws the slider, he bites down on his lip, and you can tell on his face or the way that the ball jumps out of his hand when he throws it, it's clear what he's throwing. That is pitch tipping. That is not sign stealing. And I think that we have to draw that delineation. Now, there's no evidence to me that anything untoward is going on. I do think that when really talented pitchers are hit hard in consecutive starts, where they have a streak where they're in the zone and they're throwing quality pitches, but the opposition is on them, then I think as a baseball team, you do your homework and say, okay, what is he giving something away here? Or is he becoming either too predictable, or is he something in his motion when he throws his changeup? Are the gloves, the fingers on his mitt, are they fanning out because he's going there to get the changeup grip? I mean, that is totally legal to pick that stuff up. It's just that's which is not at all the same thing as stealing signs. And listen, this goes back. I can tell you every time, and this is one of the greats of our era that I've covered. Every time Justin Verlander struggled for two starts in a row, he was convinced that he was tipping his pitches every time, because in his own mind, he never wanted to say, "Well, they're just better than me." He never went there. It was always something else was wrong. I was giving something away, and then he would go watch a bunch of video, scrutinize it, and fix it. And I'm not saying that's what's happening with Dylan Cease, but if it was, and obviously Ozzie has great baseball instincts, it would not surprise me.
John Morosi is our guest. What was your opinion of how Major League Baseball handled the Josh Donaldson, Tim Anderson incident?
I think they did the right thing, and I'll say a couple things about it. Number one, it was obviously in poor taste what Josh said. It was the wrong thing to say at the wrong time. The notion that it was some kind of a joking, good-natured thing between friends just doesn't pass muster, because we've seen how these teams have played against each other the last couple of weeks. That's just not reality. I think that it was not the right thing to say, nor was it the right time. And context matters. It is not for anyone to say how Tim Anderson should feel when he was called a name in that sense. That was just not appropriate. And so if he was offended by it, it's his right to be offended by it. That's number one. The other part is, even if you were of the mind that a player should not be suspended in this context, you have to also realize that the language precipitated a benches clearing incident. And so there was a manifest on-field thing that happened because of what Josh had said. So it's impossible for me to to climb in there and say, well, what was Josh's intent truly benign? I don't know. But the reality is what he said was inappropriate. He said the wrong thing at the wrong time. And there was a consequence for that. I think it was a fair punishment. I think baseball did their due diligence. And even when you have people in Josh's own clubhouse, like Aaron Boone, who notably said that he didn't think Josh should be suspended, but that what was said was inappropriate. Aaron Judge said it was inappropriate. It seems fairly apparent that Josh did something wrong, and he was punished for it. I think overall, I think baseball did a very good job of handling it.
You think Donaldson is a Yankee when the trade deadline comes and goes?
You know, that's a great question, because they're obviously playing well, and he's had some good moments so far. He really has. How does he, and obviously now he's on the COVID IL, how does he get back into the clubhouse? It's hard to say. I do think internally, like most things in baseball, it will be personnel driven. Is there someone that they believe can take his place and do the job better at third base? Is Andujar, does he find a way to play his way back into the good graces of the organization? I'll say this. I think the way that Josh handles it, going forward, what does he say to his own teammates? How does he treat people going forward? I think baseball in general is a pretty forgiving place, but your actions have to match up to your apology. And I think that really on some level, the answer to that question is it's up to him. It's up to him and how he conducts himself, and it's up to him and how he plays. And if at some point in time the cost-benefit tips to the negative side, then I think it would not surprise me at all if the Yankees moved on from him.
I'm curious. I'll ask the question simply, and then if you don't see where I'm coming from, I can give you the longer preamble. What is your perception of what the Cubs' plan is to build the next great Cubs team?
So I don't think yet that it's entirely clear. How's that? I think that they're trying. They've made some smaller moves, but you look at the pieces in general. I think we are so early in the process that it is not even really outside of where Wilson Contreras gets moved, which I think is certainly a possibility. You saw the Mets, James McCann's out now. I think there's going to be a lot of interest in him around the game. I think the next logical step is that you trade Contreras. And if you're going to take this thing all the way down, similar to what you did a decade ago, that's what you would do. But if you're thinking more of the express rebuild, then do you sort of hold the fort now and then try to re-sign Contreras long-term and then make another run at Carlos Correa, which I believe that they had tried to do last offseason? I think we'll know pretty soon, but I think that the telltale sign for me, guys, is going to be on August 2nd, is Wilson Contreras still a Cub?
When we talked to Jed Hoyer about this exact thing, he intimated flat out that the environment around MLB does not lend itself to a full-scale rebuild like he, Theo, and the Cubs underwent in 2011, 2012. Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, I mean it does. I think that obviously the draft rules are different. We now have a lottery. And by the way, this is all good. The lottery is a good thing. And the union wanted it, and they should have wanted it. Because what I've kept saying to people around the game for a long time, when people would say they're frustrated about why isn't my team spending, you have to look at the rules and the incentives to spend. And when you at the top side, okay, you make one more playoff spot to compete for, okay, that moves you towards spending a little bit more. On the bottom side, when finishing last is less appealing, you adjust your algorithm. A lot of the decisions that are made in terms of how teams value players are predicated on what that additional win value is, the marginal win curve, et cetera. But they do it based on your chance to make the playoffs and your chance to bring in the revenues and compete for a championship. And what I'm saying is, I think, and Jed is touching on this, and what he told you, is that decidedly the incentives to spend and compete are higher now than it was before. Back in the day, you could take it all down to the studs, pick high, overspend on high school players, and express your rebuild that way. You can't do that anymore. So you have to, I think, be a bit more discerning. You probably have to spend some more money to compete. And I do think the Cubs, you look at their division, the Brewers are not going to be this great forever with their pitching. And so I do think there'll be a window when they come back down to earth a little bit. And the Cardinals are still going to be the Cardinals for a while. I think their team is really well structured right now. But I do think that they can – the Cubs, once we sort of see how they handle Contreras, I think we'll know a lot more about is it a 1 or 2 year plan or is it a 3 to 4 year plan. But I agree with what Jed is saying to you that he's not going to be able to do what he did before.
One more White Sox-related thing. The Twins are getting good pitching, obviously, out of Joe Ryan. Sonny Gray was great last night. If they go if they go ace shopping or front of the rotation shopping, have you looked ahead at all as to what the options are going to be in a year like this? Have you done trade deadline research yet, John?
I have, and I'll mention this one name that's already on the mound actually today, Paul Blackburn of the A's. Huh. Nobody ever talks about this guy. He's on the mound right now. They're playing the Mariners in Seattle. Paul Blackburn right now has a 1.91 ERA. Now, he's not somebody that goes deep into games. He's had a lot of injury issues in the past. But he is someone that when he's handled properly in terms of his innings, has a real impact. Now, is he an ace? I'm not sure that I would go to that extent. But he is someone that I think, you look at those numbers right now, he is a really appealing guy to keep an eye on. And I know he's someone that I think has not gotten nearly the credit that he deserves. I think he's a really, really appealing pitcher that I think he'll be looked at around. And I'd also say this, if the Marlins struggle to get back into this race, and obviously the Mets are running away with this thing, Pablo Lopez, they have control of him, so there's not really a lot of urgency right now. But he has been an all-star level pitcher, almost Cy Young level pitcher in the NL. So Pablo Lopez, remember that name, Pablo Lopez in Blackburn there in the American League.
John Morosi, as always, thank you. Did we hear Gabriella in the background there?
Oh, they're home. Oh yeah. So I told my wife this. I was lucky that she picked them up from school. We got some new flooring going in the house. I had to find the one room that was quiet from the flooring, and naturally, the girls get picked up from school, walk in the door, and they can find me, guys, within like 20 seconds, and they start slamming on the door. It's unreal. It's like they appreciate it because I love being a dad, so it's a lot of fun.
Just get her in line, okay? It's a little disrespectful.
I'll try my very best, my friends.
Maybe you shouldn't travel so much, John. Maybe you should be at home for your daughters more often.
Wow.
I got to think about it. This is like, listen, I just turned 40. As you guys, and by the way, thank you for all the happy birthday wishes last week. I appreciated that. I mean, when you turn 40, you start to think, man, right? It's like, how do you get more time at home?
Yeah, speaks, you know about that.
Yeah, I do.
Parenting family hour podcast sometime with you guys. We'll talk about it, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
No, but not during the hockey playoffs. Keep traveling during the hockey playoffs, your beloved sport. Go.
Hockey is great. How about that Battle of Alberta, man? What a game last
night.
Gotta go, John.
See you later. All the best.
Does
Thanks,
not
guys.
Matter. I could care less.
See you, John. That's John Morosi. MLB Network, 100 other jobs.
Yeah.